The following program is rated M16+. Parental guidance recommended.
Welcome to Bounce Back. My name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events and you're listening in on DRN1. Bounce Back is a fun talkback show and today we have two Perth-based comedians, Michael Gledhall and Jared Goundry. Welcome, guys.
Hey, Yvonne. Nice to see you again.
Welcome.
How good's Yvonne's voice?
You're just saying that just then and I'm like, that'd be a nice audiobook voice.
Oh, thank you.
Because Mick sounds like what we were saying, hard rock FM.
Since you started talking, I was like just drifting off, right?
See, that's the problem. It's kind of monotone and
it's soothing. It's soothing. It's like therapy.
Yeah, it's okay. No, okay, big up for that.
I've actually had a few comedians come in and say, you know, you should do a hypnosis track.
So okay.
I might work on it, you
that's
know?
Is that a compliment?
I don't know. Maybe.
You got a voice that could make someone quit smoking.
Well, I'll come in here angry and now I'm just full chilled.
Have some more water, okay? That's my mum tip.
That's what it is.
So basically, Michael, you've been with us before on episode 2. So thank you so much for coming back. I think we're at episode 24 or something now.
Wow, so congratulations.
Wow, yeah. I missed so many. No, thanks, Yvonne. It's great to see you again, yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed last time. It was a hoot.
It was lots of fun. We were sort of coming just out of lockdown then. And
it was with Simone.
Yeah, it was with Simone.
We talked about some army stuff, right?
Yeah, we did.
We touched on stuff we're going to talk about now.
Yeah.
I'll expand.
Yeah, that's great.
This is the sequel to episode 2.
You guys are going to be running out of the door.
Not episode 3, episode 25.
No, not that story again.
People won't know. It's okay.
For the fifth time.
And Jared, you're not actually really Perth-based, are you?
Oh, get off that. No, I am. Well, I'm not Perth-based, but I'm Perth boy.
Yeah.
I spent the age of 0 to 18 here.
Yeah.
Grew up, born and bred.
But we're just lucky to have you here right now, aren't we?
And then I came back because now it's great.
Yeah. It's fantastic, isn't it?
It's really the place to be. I mean, not just from a comedy sense, from a life sense. I've just come from Melbourne, which is in complete lockdown up until just now, essentially. And Perth is probably the most happening place in Australia for live entertainment, shopping, bands, concerts. Like, it's all right here, right now.
Yeah.
And I'm just, like, totally stoked to be a part of it and really happy for also all the local acts that are getting probably overdue sort of stage time.
Yeah.
Because stupid Eastern States acts have been coming in and stealing their time just from the fact that they're from over there.
Yeah.
And now they're all getting up and there's just so much talent around the joint.
Oh, it's
really
awesome.
Happy for it.
It's a lot of fun, actually. So, yeah. We're happy you're here, so
thank
welcome home.
I bought him breakfast in Cottesloe too. Oh,
yeah.
Did you?
That's like the most Perth thing ever.
Yeah.
We went to Cottesloe. And he pretended like I hadn't been there before, but I've been there lots of times. He's like, yeah, so this is the beach. They're pretty good over the west. Sunsets over there. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I just let him go. Oh. It was cute.
I really enjoyed your scarf that you're wearing from Melbourne.
I was there sweating. And I'm like, yeah, it was nice.
It's like that whinge moment.
I've lost it. I've lost everything about Melbourne now. Like, I drink flat whites.
I thought he had a tail, but it was his clip-on man bun and was in his back pocket.
What do you think of people from Melbourne? Because I'm obviously from there.
My
now.
Family are from Mexico. My cousin just had a baby this year, actually.
Mm.
Yeah, she's had her first baby. I got family there. I actually like the place.
But we get you give us a fair bit of stick when we're not around.
So cold.
What's the stereotype for us? Just wankers.
Yeah.
Essentially.
You know more than us. I mean, let's face
I'm there, so, you know, not many people say it to my face, but I feel it.
I don't know. I lived in Sydney for 5 years. So
disgusting.
I did too. Yeah. 5 years.
Well. Yeah.
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 And then the 90s. Were you alive then? Or?
Oh, yeah, just, you know.
So was I.
I used to love the vibe over in Sydney, Melbourne. It was fantastic.
It's good if you want to chase a dream and then lose it and then work in a bar. That's what it's for. It's full of so many cafes because everyone who works in a cafe is just a struggling artist. And it's amazing because they're not focusing on their job.
The service
is horrible.
Women want to go shopping till they get shin splints in Melbourne, right?
Shopping till you get shin splints. What are you shopping for? Just you know, orthopedics.
You got any shin guards, like from hockey? Rotator cuff syndrome from lifting stuff off the shelves.
My favourite part of
lifting it all day and I haven't bought a thing.
My favourite part of any shopping experience is just looking at kind of like women between the age of 50 and 70 and then finding their husband sitting somewhere. just having a nap,
barely alive.
Yeah, he's like, he didn't want to be there. He didn't. He had the option to stay home, but she's like, "No, come, you'll enjoy it."
You can tell he's got sleep apnea too.
She needs someone to carry the bags, right?
We're going to go through every medical term, I reckon, this show.
Welcome back to the medical podcast.
Oh, hey, okay, guys, I'm going to ask you a few questions.
Oh, wait, that's right. We're on her show.
You're on air, right.
We love each other, if you haven't noticed.
I was going to say, you guys had breakfast in Cottesloe, had breakfast in Coogee recently, and I had, you know, not even, that hadn't even been on my radar. It was so beautiful. So I recommend going there next.
Right on the beach, or was there a particular cafe venue?
A little cafe. Oh. Can't remember the name. So it wasn't fish and chips
down on the beach for breakfast?
No, it was stunning. Really cool venue. So, yeah.
When you remember it, let us know. We'll go together.
Yeah. You know, funny thing. Another one. Recently, a friend of mine suggested I wash my hair in vinegar. Yeah, the first thing I did was when I bought salt and pepper. Salt and vinegar chips.
Did you put your dandruff over them?
It did. I got vinegar. I washed my hair in vinegar, and then I went, I'm going to go get some fish and chips now.
It looks good, but there's 10 seagulls constantly around him.
Mick, I've just got this image of you putting your head over the fish and chips and, like, scratching until the dandruff comes off, you know, salting those things.
Yeah, no, you're right. I had seagulls dive bombing me like the Luftwaffe, right?
I like how you're like, oh, I'm going to ask you some questions now. He's like, anyway, so I washed my hair with vinegar.
Sorry.
Oh my god. Apple cider vinegar's good too, okay?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not balsamic, yeah.
Unless you chew on your hair, but I don't think yours is long enough. All right. What is your background, guys? I know that you're both ex-military, so
are you just gesturing to me to go first?
Please, sure?
Yes. What's my background? Obviously, spent some time here in Perth. Didn't really know what I wanted to do. Kind of accidentally found myself in the military by saying I went to a recruitment centre and they just hard sold it to me. And before I knew it, I was signing forms and I was gone, went off, and I spent 7 years in the military. And then when I got out, I was just over that way and I kind of stayed. And yeah, that's like the whole kind of backstory of how I even became a comedian or doing anything, was just I just found myself just completely by accident into this world of telling jokes. I found it in the, I don't know about you, but I found comedy in the army because I was funny. You know, there's like one, you know, when something serious is happening, there's 30 people saying, hey, we've got to do this. And there's just one dickhead. Mm. That was me.
Yeah.
And you know, they're important in the, like, morale.
Yeah. I was that guy too. Yeah. That there's a similarity there. And did I just say similarity?
Is that a word?
Yeah. I just made it up. But I was just talking to, so I train 3 days a week. Have you finished? Do you want to keep going with yourself?
Yeah, go.
Let's go back to the vinegar. I need some more tips with that. Yeah, so I train with ex-army guys, 3 days a week, and the banter is dark, right?
Yeah.
So our coping mechanism within the military is dark humour. Mm-hmm. It is a stock standard issue thing you get from the Q store, and there's the same with the police and ambulance and nurses too. They have the same crazy sense of humour. I don't know. I've dated a couple of nurses that were they swore more than me, right? So that's their coping mechanism. Mm. Yeah. Comes in all shapes and sizes.
Yeah. That's fun. I think, you know, that dark humour, it definitely has a place, doesn't it? And
it's funny. It's really great, you know, like it's just when like really crazy stuff is happening and, you know, sometimes you got to like, not just crazy, but like you're getting yelled at or whatever when you're doing your basic training and all that sort of stuff, and then something will happen and someone will just go and then the next person will go and that in that moment is like completely beautiful, you know, until you get caught, then it's completely push-ups.
Yeah, they man, I've done a lot of push-ups.
Not easily.
I wasn't even gonna join the military. Like, I was on the farm, living the dream. And when I was a teenager, like, my mum came up to me, because my mum's very into tough love, right?
Mm.
And she's like, Mick, you know, you're 17 years old now. You either join the army or finish primary school.
The rest is history.
I was talking to her about it earlier and I said, man, you're tough, you know. So, but Man, we made a lot of great mates, right, out of it, because everyone's in the same boat.
Yeah.
And everyone kind of has this thing where everyone's got to be able to take it, right? So they call it bastardization in some cultures, but it is bullying another, right?
Yeah.
Today they call it bullying. Yeah. Like, in the 80s it was called bastardization, and that sounded like a only child thing to me, but it wasn't a very nice kid and he was all alone. But that was an issue thing, that you had to be resilient enough. If you could, you know, you had to be resilient to be in combat, right? So the mentality is that you're no good in a bloody war unless you can shoot someone without any level of empathy for the person that you're shooting, right? Who's probably a family person themselves, and the government's gone, you need to shoot them. So, you know, that kind of mentality.
In between that, you got to be funny.
Yeah,
that's the darkness. That's the polarizing side of that.
Like gallows humor, as they call it. It's lots of like, really, I was going through on the internet, I was reading lots of journals from like World War One, Gallipoli and all that sort of stuff. And some of them was like absolutely cracker reads of just like hilarity. Like they had the Anzacs and the Turks met in the middle of, you know, the trenches one day just to do a bit of a clean up. They get talking to each other or whatever. And one of the guys goes, "Who's Allah?" Because you every time before you like run at us, like you say Allah, like who's that? Because these guys, you know, this is before the internet, before television, and they're like, "Oh, that's our God." And they're like, "Oh, bloody crikey, wouldn't you believe that?" And they're like, "Oh, who's bastard? Is that your God? Because that's what you yell every time before you run over." And it's like, that's funny. That's hilarious. Yeah. And then these guys just go back to the trenches and writing about it, like, "Oh, you wouldn't believe it's really rusty." You go, "They say Allah." You know, like sends it back to his 14-year-old wife, you know.
You wouldn't read about it. Yeah.
He's funny, he's a comedian.
Oh, yeah. You guys are great.
I've had a big day, so I'm so sorry. I've been in the bath outside.
I've had a big day in the bath.
Yeah, I got a bath.
Full of vinegar.
I got a bath in the front yard. Yeah.
In the front yard?
Yeah, it's part of the therapy, right?
Yeah.
That I still got to have the plumbing hooked up. So, well, I just bucket it in there and it just goes cold by the time I get in there. But it's still very like serenity. Like you just sit there and you overlook the yard in a bath.
Mick, are you in a nudist?
The neighbors.
No. I'm not into.
I'm curious because you know front yard bath.
Hey, man, yeah, you hung like a horse. You're like a seahorse. No, that's part of the therapy thing, right? So, yeah, just relax, man. So when I sort of departed from the Defence Force, it took a bit to unwind, right? It just took a bit for my brain to. I kind of had to disconnect from it a bit to get things back to normal, because the last time I was living a normal life was when I was a teenager, and then I'm 46 years old and I'm like, oh, I can't be a teenager again. I've got to be an adult because I've got responsibilities. But it was kind of like going back to that again, is that I had to start at square one again because it had been so long in there, right? And then I kind of thought that, man, I've got a personality disorder, and it was coming out of my comedy in the first 12 months of my comedy. And I thought, oh, man, I just really need to change the way I do comedy. Yeah. So I had a light bulb moment when I had a really bad gig, like so bad.
How bad?
Oh, it was bad enough for me to think, you know, had second thoughts about it.
Really?
But, you know, when you get that moment when you go, oh, I'm not going to give in. I'm not going to stop.
I've had a bad gig in years, just saying. But they always, when I used to, they always used to hit the next day in the shower.
Oh,
so I'd wake up, have a shower.
The crying game.
Yeah, so I'd be washing my hair with vinegar.
You're throwing smoke.
Because I heard that's good.
You're throwing smoke.
And then I was just like, and then it hit, and I'm like, oh no. Who saw that? Oh, great, four people. Yeah. Amazing, you know.
Mick, how long were you in the Army for?
Well, overall in the Defence Force, I went Army, Air Force, and then Army. And overall it was just under 30 years. So
that's a really long time.
Most of the time it was with the Air Force. I don't think I was particularly suitable for the Army, to be honest. I think, like, there's a lot better people that would be in the Army than me.
Why do you say that?
Like, here's one across the table. But the Air Force had a great time in the Air Force, right? So I used to love, you know, stand to first thing in the morning, be icy cold. I'd be just gazing out, you know, through the hotel window.
That's a little joke.
Yeah.
Because the Army call the Air Force Chair Force. Just a little play on words because they do nothing.
We have a
like,
bed.
Well, that's a wee thing.
We have a bed. Yeah.
We just sleep on our own rubbish.
I'm a pretty relaxed kind of guy. I'm not a killer, right? I couldn't. think, oh, I could shoot that person for someone else, right, and be okay with that, right?
I got that before when you kind of were very empathetic about the idea that they were a person with family and everything else. I thought, oh, how did you cope with that? But
Yeah. But there are people in the system that can shut that out, right?
Complete psychopaths, yeah. I don't know if it
they are clinical psychopaths. They become that because they get indoctrinated that that's the right thing to do.
It's not very common, but there is people who, if they weren't for the military, I don't know what they'd get up to in life. I mean, like all the things you can do in there, you can get away. You know, like it's pretty crazy. And if you've got an avenue to do that for a job, woohoo.
Jared,
good on him.
Jared's from a combat related role, right? He knows all about the ins and outs of being in a combat team, right?
Blowing stuff up.
And knowing all different types of weapons, you know, and when things go bad, how to patch people up temporarily and move on with your life, right? Because that's kind of a hard thing to do because they say, look, if a dude's wounded, you just kind of do what you can or really just keep moving with the team. You kind of got to leave him there, you know, if you're in the middle of something, right? So you kind of have to be a little bit heartless and that's where the dark humor comes in. To kind of, you know, make things just normalise it, right? Yeah.
It's just such a full-on profession. And I say a profession, like, you know, there's an old saying that the two oldest professions in the world are soldiering and being prostitute. And, you know, they very much go hand in hand a lot of the time.
I've been both, yeah.
But it is a profession.
I'm not bragging, I'm sorry.
Nudist colony, well hung. Okay.
I think only since, you know, the big world wars has, you know, violence on that scale kind of been frowned upon. You know, before that, I mean, human beings have been doing that for as long as they've been human beings.
Yeah.
And it's just such a fascinating world that now it's just so industrialized and structured and whatnot. And, you know, Mick was saying 30 years. I mean, I only did 7, but...
It's business, Jared. That's what it is.
And it's big business too.
It's business. It's money, right? Wars make money for people.
I also feel that our emotional intelligence has grown somewhat since,
100%.
You know.
Big time.
Oh, amen to that.
Yeah. Oh,
if we were in 1977 now, I'd be like, are you serious, man? Come on.
Yeah. But especially, I think, as a country, as Australia and, you know, countries like United States and stuff, probably Vietnam was the big change for that, as in, like, it was probably the first time where the population kind of stopped a war.
Mm.
And it took a long time. And, you know, the people who did that at the start of a war were really frowned upon. And then by the end of it, and then 10 years, 20 years, 30 years later, all of those people who protested were seen as kind of like heroes.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of guts for those people to do it first.
Yeah.
So it just makes you think, like, what people are protesting about now, then in 10, 20, 30 years, they might be the sort of the saviours of that kind of cause.
Yeah.
So I think public is changing, but, like, make no mistake about it, it's still very big business. It drives international politics incredibly,
yeah,
you know.
It's not a great shop front, really, is it?
Not, you know? Not really.
There's nothing fancy in the window there that you're looking at, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you know.
You do get shin splints, though.
Yeah. Man, if you shop hard enough, you'll get them, right? And the blisters, man, don't get me started.
Have you, where's the most interesting place you guys have ever travelled to with regards to
work?
Yeah, with work.
So for me, probably in the Pacific region. Mm-hmm. It would be an island, Bougainville Island. And that's currently just gone through elections to be independent, right? So they had a civil war from 88 to 98, and then they had this peacekeeping operations till 2003. 2001, they had a peace treaty signed, and now they're having their elections. They had like a 98% vote for independence, but now they have to try and disconnect from Papua New Guinea, which is, I've heard, corrupt. I'm not saying that they are, but I've heard that in circles, right? But the mining giants want that island because it's packed full of everything that's worth a mint, right? But Rio damaged it big time back in the 60s. Like the Papua New Guinea dollar was worth more than the US dollar in the 60s. That's how rich they were there. And then they just completely destroyed all the infrastructure on the island. And we were there as peacekeepers after we had supported the PNG government to kill all the people on the island that were rebelling against the mining operations. And then we just went in there with a multi-task, multi-force to just band-aid the situation until they got some sort of government in place, right? So they stopped, got all the weapons off the island, cleaned the joint up a bit, and people started living kind of normal lives again. So that was my experience in like an official overseas operations. Yeah. So, and it was awesome. I made heaps of great mates, had some seriously crazy experiences. So we flew everywhere by chopper. So every job was just jump in a chopper, fly to a different place. And it was just a magnificent country. Had some of the best surf I've ever seen. It was mental, yeah.
It's like when I went to East Timor, and everywhere I went, geez, this is a good break.
Yeah.
You know, like this place is the most picturesque.
What about the temperature? Line.
Oh, through the roof. Disgusting. It was like Bali. Yeah.
Where's the pina coladas, man?
Yeah, well, there was nothing. But it's like everywhere I looked, I'm like, this place is like holiday destination.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just one circumstance changes, you know, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Sets it down a different path.
Yeah.
Jared, was that your one of the best places you've been to, or interesting, I should say?
Oh, I think it's definitely shaped who I am a lot. I mean, I think I had some of the best times as well. Obviously, it was quite full on at times, and it was a real eye opener seeing that scale of poverty. As in, we are so lucky here, yeah, and throughout the world, in the Western sense. But just, you know, families are 12 under a couple of pieces of corrugated iron. Mental. We went to a village once. And there was a guy who had kind of deformed legs and was clearly mentally sort of really unstable. And he had a welded together handcuffs made of a bike chain and a bit of rope. And he was tied to a tree. And we were like, he was going crazy. And we're, first of all, I think was like, sorry, what the hell is going on there? And then the locals were saying, hey, no, don't worry about him. He's just got the demons in the brain. We're like, oh, demon brains. Right. My bad. We're like, we need to, this is not on.
Yeah.
And then push come to shove, and then we didn't have any jurisdiction. And they're like, that's not your job.
Oh, that's so hard.
And that's just like, it's the biggest cultural shock,
yeah,
I'd ever experienced, was just being like, oh, no, for them, that's just a different situation. And that won't change for a long time. Do you know what I mean? So you got to walk away from that. And yeah, I think about that guy like once a month.
Yeah. No, I've got three children. I've had three cesareans. I used to really and struggle with that until I met a nurse that worked off PNG. She was a midwife. And she was explaining to us what happens with cesareans, and there's like a 98% mortality rate if you have to have a cesarean over there. And that's what made me go, wow, we are so lucky here. But with one of my children, I had preeclampsia. And she said what happens there is the people think that you've got a demon, and they will drag you into the jungle and they will leave you there to die because you're possessed. So you and your baby will die. And I was just so blown away. It's such a different world to us, isn't it?
Yeah, at what point do you step in?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So like, she medically was training the locals to change that ideal. And she said, but it was just, yeah, something that she had to work really hard at. And
yeah.
Kind of like their barter system, though, because I had a dude, I showed him a photo of my then girlfriend at the time, and he offered me 10 pigs for her, right?
That's not bad.
I rang her that night and I said, "We're going on." As soon as I get back from deployment, we're going on holidays. She goes, "Where are we going?" I said, "Papua New Guinea."
10 pigs? Really?
Oh, man, can you imagine how rich I would be now?
Yeah.
I'd have pigs coming out of me. 10 pigs, are you kidding?
That's
my biggest regret for my time in the military.
But she left, and then you'd have no pigs and no girlfriend.
She left me for a pig.
We bought a monkey. So we flew in, we had to make a base from scratch out of this burnt out school, and then in the local town there was this monkey smoking ciggies in the middle of the town, just punching durries like, and I was like, oh, obviously that's incredible. And I'm like, but then I was like, what's happening here? And they're like, oh, he just smokes these ciggies and people throw money in or whatever. And I said, well, how much do you want for him? Because he can't live this life. They floated a price of like $30. And I'm like, that's pretty cheap for a monkey. And I had that in my pocket. So I was like, boom, done. Bought the monkey, brought it back to the base. And we had to get him off the darts. I don't know if you've ever tried to get a monkey off the ciggies, but they don't like it.
No.
At all.
I love that you said, I don't know if you've ever tried. Of course we haven't.
Hey, for 4 days, he went cold turkey or cold monkey. And, like, he was sitting there, he was going up all night, just, like, kind of, like, shaking my, like, mosquito dome where I was sleeping.
Couldn't
like,
you just give him one?
Well, after 4 days, I said, fuck this. We went and sat on the stairs of the school and we both had a cigarette. I was like, well, it's just like, I was like, talking to him, like, dude, you're like three. You can't keep doing this, you know, whatever. And we finally, like, weaned him. Like, it took weeks on end, but he got off the ciggies and then he, like, got, like, a sugar addiction. And he would, like, people would give him lollies all the time and then he was, like, hooked on them. But it was really sad because every time we used to go out and patrol, he would kind of, like, miss us. So I ended up putting him in the tower where the base was because that was manned 24 hours a day. So then he could just be with people all the time. But everyone used to smoke in there. So he got back on the darts. After like 2 months, he was back on the sickies. I was like, oh, whatever. You just live your life.
Yeah, now he's a heroin addict.
Yeah. The old truth. That's,
I'm a bit shocked. I just didn't even.
There's no rules.
Yeah. He became his driver.
Yeah. Oh, no smoking in the car.
Can you clean this weapon? He bathes him.
We found a stray dog as well, Rambo, we called him. And because there's lots of stray dogs in these countries that have civil unrest, like obviously one of the first things that goes is pets.
Yeah.
So they're just everywhere. They're just these dogs. And we found one and we just gave him the best diet in the world and he fattened up and we brushed him and he had good hair. And he'd come on patrol with us and he was just strutting. He had this thing and then other stray dogs would come like to like sniff us and you'd just get into it and then just kind of like real cocky like walk away.
Here comes that fat dog.
Yeah.
I hate that dog.
Look at that. He used to be one of us.
I'm going to bite him on that fat guts.
He's the one with a friend with a monkey.
That monkey riding on its back. Lady Godiva.
15 years too late on that idea. I would have made it happen.
Yeah. So your comedy started when you were both in the services.
Oh, I was at school.
At school.
Yeah, I used to like getting books in the library when we're waiting for the teachers to get their act together to start the class. We'd be stuck in the library. And while we're waiting, I used to like getting just randomly pull a book out and then just butchering the story, right? Like pretend I'm doing the good deed, like reading to the class while the teacher's getting organised or whatever she's doing, probably hungover.
It's your first routine. Yeah.
And I'm like, this isn't true. This story is bollocks, right? And I would swear just enough that everyone could hear. And that would explode. So, yeah, it was in – it was probably the turn when I just started high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, my first year of high school was my first act.
Was your first
gig, it was killer, yeah, honestly. Kill. It was easy because you could just make stuff up reading the story.
Do you reckon you'd bring it back, that act?
It's worth it. It's worth a look.
A crack.
Yeah, I've got a knack. See that. I got a knack for that. So I used to like do it for reports. In the Air Force. Nice. When the computer came in.
The Kalamunda History Village has a classroom.
Yeah.
Maybe we could just set that up as a fringe event and you could go in there and.
Yeah, it would. I'm okay, kids. So put your earmuffs on. It's going to get messy.
Joe, what about yourself?
I was really funny at school. Not to detriment to my grades, but, you know, I was a guy, my mate Kyle, funniest guy I ever met, loved him to bits, and we were kings. I'd go back there in a heartbeat, but then I joined the military on a whim, and then I think my kind of first gigs were like, I was doing impressions, so I used to kind of impersonate sort of our sergeants and our drill people. One had a voice that's like squeaked all the time, so I thought it'd be a really good idea to kind of form everyone up and do that for them. Make them go, oh, left, right. And once again, it was destroying until, like, everyone fell silent. And I kept going because I was getting into them like, you listen to me when I'm going. Anyway, that guy was right behind me. And it was the sweetest, sweetest punishment I'd ever done because I was killing. Yeah. I was crushing and I was the talk of the town. Like, I was talking the whole base. Like, did you hear what Boundary did? I went to the mess and I was just, people were going, you know? And, you know, I was renowned. And then I just went doing the military and did my own thing. And I didn't think about comedy. Comedy was really late for me. I didn't start till I was about, you know, 28. And I didn't think about, oh, every now and then I would sit in the car and have a daydream and I'd be like, oh, I could do. And it wasn't until later in life I just went to a bar and saw open mic and just saw act after act die. And I went, nah, I can do that. Yeah. I'm funnier than that. And then I went up and I wasn't. I just wasn't for like the first three times. And then the fourth time it happened. And then I just went, this is nice. I'm going to keep doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And what about for Morel in the services? What do they do for you guys?
Well, back in the day, it was consume as much alcohol as you like. That was pretty well it. These days, they're a lot more focused on being more professional. So a lot of them are like professional athletes, people in the Defence Force these days. But, yeah, back in the day, like I can only speak from when I joined in the 80s, right? So it was very social back then, right up to the 90s. Like there was no real wartime operations going on. Everyone was just in training mode and it was really social. It was it was just a really awesome time. Everyone knew everyone. It was really cool. And then people started moving off base, become a little bit not so personal anymore, not so social because OH&S, you couldn't have alcohol at work. And so there was this massive culture change for the better, can I say, because then exposed sexual harassment, you know, the damage it did to people within the system as well that people are going to go unaccountable for, right? So it's changing for the better, yeah, but like change, it takes time. Yeah. And people advance faster than the government do, right? That's general rule of thumb.
100%, yeah. People's perception changes faster than policy. And in that institution too, because it's so close within its own ranks, it has to change on the outside to then get the pressure to go inside there because it is so secular, you know?
Great bunch of people going in these days, like super, like high EQs, high IQs, super fit, just exactly the people you want in the Defence Force doing the job that
there's so many jobs now, like cyber and like cyber, IT, because everything's in computerized now, so which means they need literally an army of people to fix the stuff for the army of people.
It's a brand new ECN in the army is cyber warfare.
Yeah, well, drones and stuff would go into that, wouldn't it? Like,
definitely.
So what? Yeah.
People ever visit like your base? So we had Bob Hawke came down, sculled a yard glass in front of us and we went wild. It was like 700 people went to our boozer, which is our bar.
I did a guard of honour for Bob Hawke at the front gate of RAF Base Edinburgh in 1986.
Yeah.
And he was so drunk.
Yeah, they don't make him like that anymore, do they?
I know, nearly drunker than me.
We had Pink come down. She was doing the promoting the V8s at the time.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, she came down to our bar and had a beer and then promptly left because everyone was staring at her. And then Russell Crowe came.
Yeah.
And we gave him this really, really ugly vest that just had our logo on it. We're like, oh, thanks for coming down, Rusty. He's like, oh, cheers. And then probably 3 weeks later on the front page of the Townsville newspaper was Rusty in Hollywood wearing that vest, being like, Russell Crowe supporting the boys. Right? And he was just like, yeah, it's handy. Yeah. Like, it's warm. Like, he didn't really care.
It's bulletproof. It's spine proof. Don't get hit in the face. No.
The greatest guest we ever had was I had the pleasure of, like, helping run the bar, and we hadn't had any entertainment for a while, and we got our heads together and we said, hey, we want to get, like, a really sort of kind of D-grade celebrity to come down and just hang out. And we got our heads together and we sort of said, Mike Whitney, like the guy who used to run Who Dares Wins, and the Australian cricketer. We're like, let's get him down. Like, he's awesome, isn't he?
And yeah, but like, he's osteo and his hip isn't.
So we get a hold of him. We're like, through an extensive Google search, we get a hold of his assistant because he still has one. And we call her up and we're like, hey, this is where we're from. We're from the army. We'd like, you know, we'd like Mike Whitney to come down and have a drink. She's like, okay, we've passed on your number and he'll get back to you. And we're like, he's not. Anyway, I'm going for a run down the beach that night with my phone and it rings. He's like, g'day, Mike here. And I'm like, Mike who? He's like, Mike Whitney. Oh. I was like, oh, no way. And I said, hey, do you want to come down to our bar and drink beers with the guys? And he's like, oh, look, I can't because I'm going to India to, you know, commentate the IPL. So I'll give you a call back in 6 weeks. I said, all right, no worries. 6 weeks later, nearly to the day, my phone rings. He's like, hey, it's Mike. I'm like, Mike who? He's like, Mike. He's like, Mike Whitney. I'm like, oh, Mike Whitney, how you going? He's like, you still want me to come drink beers? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, things have changed. I'm like, why don't you, we've got our battalion ball coming up.
Yeah.
Why don't you come and MC it? I said, we'll fly you up. We've got heaps some money, we'll put you in a hotel and all that sort of stuff and we'll look after it. He goes, no, 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 I'll get my own way there and I don't want to stay in a hotel. I want to drink beers and I want to sleep in the barracks with the boys. So I'm like, okay, done. Wow. Just wrote a check I couldn't cash. So all of a sudden I'm in front of the big wigs being like, yeah, so he wants to sleep in the barracks. And I said he can. And they're like, look, you just look after it. He's your responsibility. I said, no worries. So then he comes to the airport. I'm standing at the airport with a sign saying Mike Whitney. Mike Whitney is walking out. And then from about 10 meters away, I'm like, this guy's drunk. Like, this guy's real drunk. And he gets up and the booze smell hits me. And he shakes my hand and he's like, yeah, Jared, how are you? And I'm like, yeah, good. And I'm like, did you have a big night, Mike? He goes, yeah, I had a gig. I said, you had a gig? And he goes, yeah, I'm in a band. I said, what's the name of the band? And he goes, Mike Whitney Band. Check him out on YouTube. They're wicked. Anyway, he just sings covers and like sells out places in Sydney, like RSLs and stuff.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, oh, right. See, so before the ball, we have an open day where they get all the equipment out and Mike's hammered. And I got to look after him. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, no, I've got a drunk Mike Whitney and he's all my responsibility. So he's just walking from sort of like armored vehicle to armored vehicle. He gets on top of an APC and like holds a machine gun, throws me his phone. He's like, get a photo of this. And he's just like, bah, 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 like just. And I'm like, oh, my Lord. And then he gets.
Rainbow.
I take him down to the bar. He's like, I got to go get change. So show him to where he's going to be staying. And he goes and he gets his suit out, which is a full penguin suit, which is like completely overdressed. And I'm like, ah, whatever. And he gets there and starts hitting the bar too hard, right? And just boom, boom, boom. And then I got to sit there with him, the mayor of Townsville's wife, my like colonel who I don't talk to ever, like not even allowed to talk to, but I'm just, because I'm Mike Whitney's offsider, I'm at their table and he's like, yeah, anyway, so we're in India and bowling. And he just wouldn't shut up. And I'm just like, oh, no. And then he gets up. And he's just swaying around and he does a speech to everybody and it's just going real badly. And then he tells like the funniest, probably the funniest joke I've ever heard. And he just like walks into the microphone. And he goes, you know, I've got triplets. There's just silence. And he goes, and you know, I used to play cricket. Silence. And he goes, well, I'm the only motherfucker to get a hat trick off two balls. And then grabs his dick. Just grabs his dick and starts thrusting it at like 1,000 people and the joint nearly exploded. Everyone's going, Whitney, 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 Whitney. Right? Oh, becomes God. A cult hero in like 2 seconds flat. Oh. Turns it around.
He's got that on a technicality.
Then he goes behind the stage from where he's stashed a bag. And he just wheels out like a little travel bag and he goes, oh yeah, look, I didn't organize this, but I went around to all my old cricket mates and I got them to sign a whole bunch of stuff like stumps from tours and balls and jerseys. He's like, we're going to do an auction. All right, let's go. And just starts doing an auction. Nothing scripted. Raises like 10 grand for our charity Legacy.
No way.
Wow.
On the spot. Just boom, boom, boom. Just That's nailed amazing. It. And then just drank till like 2 a.m. and like the thing finished at 12. And I'm like, Mike, I really got to go. That was
you have
it.
To be up at 4 a.m., right?
Yeah. And then he left and I was like, that guy's a good guy.
Yeah.
Mike Whitney.
So. That's great.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It just sounds like fun, like what energy. So you guys converted from, you're both no longer in the AE discharge, is that
yeah.
right?
Or converted.
Yeah. Converted. Converted.
Conversion therapy.
I needed it. I needed something.
And so you've become comedians, full-time comedians now, or kind of as full-time as you can get in this?
I've got an ABN.
Oh. Ooh.
That's new.
That's where I'm at.
It's good. You're pretty prolific at the moment.
Oh, man, are you kidding? It's crazy. Yeah, it's great. It's going really – this weekend's busy, and next week we've got Charles, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yvonne, and and then we got those mine gigs, so, yeah. It's happening.
That's awesome.
Many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What was the biggest learning curve you guys have had as comedians then?
I had to get rid of the dark humour. I had to lose that.
Did you?
I had to go. Yeah.
You don't think there's a market for it?
Not for someone like me. For someone younger, yeah, they can drive it. But for me, coming looking at that conservative background, like when I first started, everyone's like, is this old guy, creepy old guy. Kind of had to like build a bridge with everybody because okay. when I left, I kind of went, I kind of didn't feel okay. Like I didn't really, like it took a bit to adjust. So dealing with people that were kind of like, you know, that were like, they just complain about nothing. You know what I mean? So yeah. You think, oh, come on, man. But yeah, I had to build a bridge. I had to build a bridge with the young people and connect, especially with the comedians. It was the best thing ever happened. So it educated me. I met people that educate me still today. So I needed that change, yeah, for the better, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had to, I think for me it was, I had to get more confident. If I wasn't confident, I had to make sure everybody knew that I was anyway. I changed my sort of style up maybe only sort of 8 months in, and I sort of said to myself, I made a mantra, I made kind of like an ethos. I'm like, if the gig's going good, bad, or either way, it doesn't matter. Everyone in the room needs to be looking at me. Like, I need to dominate their entire space and make sure that the attention is nowhere else but me, and like just be really engaging. And since I did that, my success rate probably went up 4 times.
Yeah.
Because there was no, I made myself the focus of whatever the hell was happening in that room.
Mm.
And then what I was saying worked.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was, yeah.
Can I ask a question, right, with that? So coupled with that, right, when you very first left defence, right, did you feel a sense of devaluement when you left? Like, did you feel like, I don't have a job that's, like, you feel productive when you do those types of things, when you go on operations and you feel like you have some sense of achievement. So when you initially leave, you go, what an anticlimax, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not doing comedy then, you're just out of the system, out of the Air Force, out of the Navy, out of the Army, and then you're not that person anymore. You're not the uniform-wearing person, and, yeah, life is an anticlimax. You just go, what's next, right?
Completely agree with that.
That's going to be pretty hard to beat what I just did, right? And to try and match it is you can't match it because you can't pay for the experiences that you had. So life, you kind of feel deflated and devalued, and you can dwell on that, and and that can exacerbate any existing issues that you got with PTSD or PTSD and depression coming out of the system, right? That just compounds it on top of that, right?
I was a part of a study that looked into the fact that people who, leave that system and then go and do a 9-to-5 are, like, really susceptible to PTSD. And I was part of a study that was looking into art and how art affects veterans. And apparently having, because you know how much purpose you get doing comedy. And, like,
man, I didn't even want to date anyone when I left because I didn't even feel, I'm going, what am I going to tell them? I'm doing nothing.
Mm.
Like, I'm retired. They made me retire. Like, I go to the beach. Go to the toilet every now and then, shower once a week.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, when I got out, I felt
you got nothing strange. To sell. You've like, got nothing to sell, right?
Yeah, I felt, I mean, because you do, as you said, you do amazing, incredible things. Like, I once fired so many rocket launchers, I got bored. You know, I was like, not another rocket launcher today. This is, I'm over it. Like, I can't do any of this anymore.
Another jump out of a herc.
Yeah, it's like, it's like, what? Helicopter water.
Another free skydive.
And then doing comedy has been so incredible for me to be able to, I mean, one, the adrenaline is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, like, drugs are fun and sex is great, but doing comedy is wicked.
Hey, man, but, it's brought that value back, right? It brought that value back that you could put that price on your head, right?
And you can never be awesome at it. And you live gig to gig and you can never let your guard down. So, therefore, I feel like I don't feel comedy could get boring.
Mm.
I'm not sure if it could, because as soon as it did, you'd die and then the next one would be fun again. Because you're like, oh, I don't want to feel that. And you'd be in the shower the next day and be like, oh. And you need to be good at it. You need to put 150% into a gig and you need to be constantly working towards more material. You need to incredibly hard to find gigs and to, you know, do like the hustle that is involved is never ending.
I don't think you can.
I love it.
You can do all those things, but also not invest too much in it enough that it's going to break you if you don't do well, right? Mm. So you have to be thin skinned. You have to go, look, this joke's not working, I'll move on to the next. I did 3 bad jokes in a row once, man. That was
doesn't
my hat
sound
trick.
Like much, but to a comedian.
Yeah.
Like he just said that, I'm like, no. Three in a row.
Yeah, you can't overinvest. When you first start, you can't overinvest. When you get to a point where you know that you can do all right, then you can invest. Like when you start getting paid, then you have to invest because people are investing in you, right? But when you first start out, like when you in that first year, you have to have zero expectations.
Mm.
You have to accept that the jokes are going to be not going to fly because it could be coming from a place that you don't want to visit ever again. And that's what happened with me, is I was bringing stuff out, I was offloading, and it was messy, and I just went, I can't just keep talking about this garbage. I've got to talk about something that's neutral, positive, and makes everyone feel good, right? Not me in a counselling session with a room full of people who don't care, yeah. right? And that's yeah. that value thing, right? So comedy has reintroduced value.
Yep.
So that's the thing that will benefit from doing it, right?
It gives you an identity again.
Give you a sense
again.
Of value, yeah.
You know, like when you're in the military, you know, I don't. I hate to say this, but
no
it's
one
it's
claps
accurate.
You in the military when you land the parachute and go, and the whole 400 people go, oh, well done, you landed the parachute and stand it up. No, you get that when you tell a good joke, right? So it's a different feedback, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like when you're in the military outside of life, outside of the military, you're still in the military and it gives you an identity.
Mm-hmm.
Good or bad, that's how it is. And it's very similar with when you're a comedian and when you put the flag in the ground and you say, I am a comedian. Comedian's a very loose term, but like when you're doing gigs and you're getting paid, like you're a comic.
Yeah.
And when you really, you know, you've got the website, you've got the pages, and you're telling everybody that you are, it gives you something, you know, like it gives you something to do again. Like that's who you are.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. I really like it.
I see it in youngsters that are not ex-military who get right into that, and sometimes it might be a little bit early, but it's still enough for them to give them a shot, right, to get their mental health right.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a great platform for that, for all walks of life, no matter who you are, right? It's good for everybody. It's a really good platform to get on. And even if it's just a funny story from school and that it makes everyone laugh, if it's just you just do it once, it'll be enough to have a memory that you can embrace, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Laughter is very therapeutic, isn't it? So
it's like music.
Yeah,
music does
music.
That too.
I love it. Yeah.
Scientifically proven.
Yeah. Like it just raises us.
It's like
it?
Dogs that know people who are really bad, that just awful people. I endorsed it. I've been bitten like 9 times. Right?
I'm laughing. Nick's the most gentle, beautiful person ever.
He sneaks up on you, doesn't he? With his funny.
And kaboom.
He's like, it's scientifically proven. And we're like, oh, this is now fact.
He's read something.
Oh, it's a joke.
Hey, man, I read books.
In the bath.
I found in the public toilet. And,
I once read, you know, Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. Have you guys ever read that?
No.
So he's basically in World War One, and it's the most insanely profound book I've ever read. And it's very short and simple, but it talks about this, you know, side effects of war and what happens psychologically to people in those situations. And it really shifted me as well, the way that he dealt with, you know, death and how he dealt with moving on from that war. And he was in a camp basically and lost his wife and child in that process. And, yeah, anyway, really good book for anyone that wants to read it. But for you guys, who's your biggest influence now in comedy?
Well, I work a lot with Simone Springer and John Pinder. So they're a team that I'm pretty tight with.
They're wicked, yeah.
I would say Simone, right, because we've done trips to America and our relationship in comedy has been really constant, although she's been a lot busier than me. She's a fantastic comedian. But, yeah, I think she would be... I don't kind of like reach out to celebrities as per se. I enjoy them and stuff, but as far as being influenced, definitely her. Mm-hmm. Like the business side of stuff, because she's a businesswoman, right?
Yeah, she's amazing.
She's all over it, right?
Yeah,
yeah, she's smart. So yeah. I'd listen. She talk, I listen.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
And then take action, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, no, she's brilliant.
I call her the boss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think as far as material generation and making new material, I keep it pretty close. Like my brother, my mum, one of my uncles are potentially one of the funniest people. They're the funniest people I've ever met. Like I come from a family that, like, we play Uno, but while Uno's going, there's another game that's going on, which is like who can win the verbal stoush, and it's fun, and you know they can lead you into a really big sort of like punch in the face where you're like, you know, oh, you know, listen to this, bam, like, oh, this is you stink, and it's just like it's always a battle, and their comedic time. My mum's probably one of the funniest people I've ever met. She can be at a party and you know she's there. Like, she's crushing, killing all the time, laughs loud. Everyone's like, who's that? Before you know it, she gets like two people, three people, four people. And she's just like, when she's done, she's like, oh, I'm done. Goes, makes coffees for everyone. And it's like, she just, I look at that and then I just go, okay, cool. And I go to that for the real natural. If I'm ever struggling to write something, I'll just ask them about their lives. And, you know, it surprises me when you get to an age where you can have a drink with your mum and then talk about when they were 16 and she's like, oh, yeah, we were drink driving and anyway, someone's crashed into a tree. And I'm like, what? You used to pick me up from soccer. You know, like, and then you can start like sort of really connecting with their lives.
They become human.
Yeah, they become really human. And I think right now over the last sort of like 5 years, I've only just come into that world.
Yeah.
And I'm obsessed with it. And it's like even old people, like, you know, like my grandparents, you know, the ones that are left, and sit down and be like, oh, so where'd you meet? Where'd you meet Bob? She's like, oh, well, he wasn't my first choice. You know, like that sort of stuff is funny.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, who was? And she's like, oh, some guy. Anyway, he went off and, you know, I don't know what happened to him, on a cray boat or something. You know, like, it's just funny. Like, everything about them is funny. And then you're like, oh, you're not someone who bakes and does this stuff for me and raised me on school holidays.
Yeah.
You're just at a different phase of your life.
Yeah.
And I want to know the rest. Like, come on, give it to me. Let's go. Like, we're mates. It's and I, so that's good. That stuff is full of so much timing. And like when someone's told a story for the 60th time and they've never thought about getting it right, it just got right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing. But then as far as like work wise, I just love every comedian I meet. Just love their process. I want to hear it. The weirder, the better, the different. You know, like we had coffee the other day and then we're like, oh, we got to go because it was like hours went past.
That's so good, isn't it?
Yeah, and we're just like, but like, how did you come up with that? And then he tells me, I'm like, oh, I never, like, I don't do that. I just do this. And I just, I'm fascinated.
Yeah.
Fascinated by the whole thing.
I love people's stories as well. People are so unique, aren't they? And yeah, everyone's got a different tale. So
it's a good moment when you realise that your parents are idiots like you.
Yeah. My mum said to me the other day, she goes, when you have kids, you're going to tell them what they should do in their life and they're not going to listen to you and they're going to do their own thing because I tried to tell you what to do in your life and you didn't listen to me, and that goes on. And then my mum, she tried to, didn't listen to her, and I'm like, oh, there's no end to this, is it? You just got to live your life and just do your best.
I used to think my grandmother used to be my grandmother, then Jesus, and then that, and then as I got to know her more, that gap got wider.
Oh, God.
She, in the end, he wasn't even near Jesus. Like, he was like, no, thanks. Man, you're bad.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, that's a misconception as a kid. You have different views, so, yeah.
We were actually playing Uno the other night, Jared. It's actually lovely, very relative to what you're saying. And I've got this situation, so I've got a 14-year-old, and I don't know what I'm doing. He's going through hormones and stuff, and you know, he's taken like two blocks of chocolate and eaten them and forgot about his brothers and everyone else. So I happen to be sitting next to him. It's so relative to your game. I'm sitting next to him and I'm like, every time I get like a draw two, and that's for stealing the chocolate now.
Exactly.
Nice.
Every single time. He got so pissed off at me.
But the other one loved it.
Oh, the other two.
Exactly. They play the crowd.
Yeah. So he's like, you're just a jerk, Mum. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Here's a draw four. Don't steal.
Table's a turn, motherfucker.
The WA's cruelest parent, ladies and gentlemen. The torturer.
But it's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. Yeah.
Did you learn from that?
He didn't. He hates me for
it. Mr. Guts, Mr. Pig. I got 10 pigs for you.
I could have got 10 pigs for you.
I'm not selling him to some person in PNG, all right?
I'll take a couple of blocks of chocolate for him. A Mars bar or two. Yeah.
Going back to that sort of family situation, I think, you know, time keeps rolling on and one day they're going to be gone, and that'll be the best memories I've ever got.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they are, aren't
shit
they?
On your family members while you can.
And you will still owe them money when they go too, I reckon.
Yeah.
What's the most ridiculous thing you guys have ever been tricked into doing, like, or believing?
Oh, this is so embarrassing. So one of my troops had a day off work, and I didn't know the number texting me, and I was kind of new to the text world. Like, I was super new. Probably would have done my history would have been two or three texts in the past, right? And then the troops start texting me from the duty phone. Hi, Mick. It's Karen from the nightclub on Saturday night.
Classic.
Amber. I went, oh, yeah. Okay. I don't remember. But anyway, how you going? Half an hour later.
Half an hour later in a dick pic.
It's not Karen. It's Rod. One of my troops.
I yeah, love that.
So now we have this, he's Karen. And I'm Mick.
Love the Karen reference.
Oh, it was funny because I used the Judy phone, like an Air Force phone, those blokes. So I had no idea what the number was. And
professional.
Oh, it's Karen.
I am... Very famously, amongst my army friends, which we still talk about to this day, I love Asian countries. Like even East Timor, the place had burned itself to the ground. Half the population was homeless, and everywhere we patrolled, there's still some guy trying to sell you Viagra. Like yeah. Everywhere you went, he's like, "Hey, yeah." So we bought like thousands. like everyone was just like, "Cause we're going home in like 6 months," and everyone's. That's exactly what you want, your partner to come home. Babe, I've got 10,000 Viagras. Like every girl's gonna be like, "Oh, great." Legend.
Like you know? You're gonna need that after 6 months on the dry.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just greedy.
It's gonna go up after 30 seconds and then you're
like
stuck
you've
with
on
it.
Sun. Oh, 10 pigs.
They'll draw four. So we had all of these like shitloads of Viagras collectively between 30 of us in our platoon. We had tens of thousands of them. And then we're like, oh look, we're gonna smuggle these back to Australia. This is illegal. So we're going to want to make sure that they work. So it all happened. We drew straws and then I picked the short straw. And I'm like, okay, so all right, cool. I'm going to go to the gym and then I'll take a Viagra and make sure it works. So we're like 4 months into an operation here. Things get like boring. So anyway, get back from the gym and I drink down this Viagra and everyone starts to giggle. And I'm like, what's funny? And they're like, we already crushed one up and put it in your protein shake. Oh. And I'm like, beg your pardon? And I'm like two Viagras deep. Like,
oh my God.
There.
Someone's ready for a run.
And then, and I'm like, no way, this cannot be happening, right? And then all of a sudden, radio, we had to go out, load up, get out and figure out someone had lost contact with their radio. Like, another patrol couldn't get radio comms. Like, go out and figure them out. I'm like, nah, man, you serious? So, like, body armor, helmet on, in a vehicle, that vibrates my bum. I'm like, oh.
Oh, yeah, he's wearing body armor, helmet, rifle. And a cushion at the front.
And I'm like, oh, we're going past ladies in grass skirts. And I'm like, no way. Like, this is not happening right now.
Is that a loaded weapon?
Yeah. And then obviously everyone thought that was potentially the funniest thing they'd ever seen. We get out to this other patrol and like nothing had happened. And then they're just like, yeah, I'm just got a boner. And I'm like, oh, like just, and then it was just
a big
spectacle.
And you got no control over that, right?
Oh, I didn't have any control over it for about 6 hours. So, yeah, we smuggled them back because they work fine, just thank you. So, yeah, we've still got about 100 left.
Is his favourite patrol.
Get bumping into things. And that's a pretty wild story.
I think he's still got, like, 300 left at home.
Yeah, they're going up. I'll swap you one for 10 pigs.
I could eat 10 pigs God. At the moment.
I'd be giving you like my miss a turn, skip a turn there.
Yeah. I'd be like Strother Dale. Yeah.
Skip.
6 hours is just too long, right?
You don't eat. It was way too long after
people
about 20 minutes.
Eat. People got to eat, man.
Yeah.
Not that either. Right? Yeah.
I don't have the jaw muscles for that. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm very dirty. Okay. Yeah. all right, have you guys got a funny joke that you can share? It can be someone else's, can be yours, just credited someone else's.
Oh, what was I going to bring? I already used it. Oh, no, I will tell my football joke, okay, which has been crushing hard everywhere I've been doing lately on the tour with John and Simone. And that was now that I'm in my 50s, I actually played my last game of Aussie Rules. I was pretty sad about that. But the good thing about it was is that I actually received a compliment on my very last game of Aussie Rules. And what had happened was I actually was hit by an opposition player. Like I was playing like a demon. And I got hit so hard that my junk popped out of my shorts. Like the whole lot, like the whole three-course meal popped out for everybody to see. And next thing I hear the umpire yell, "Fair tackle." And I'm like, oh... thank you very much. And then he yells back, play on.
He yells back, Papa Viagra.
Country towns love that joke. They just love it, right? Anything football related. Yeah. Not the West Coast Eagles. No.
I was at the, speaking of the West Coast Eagles, I was at the Comedy Lounge the other night, and the game of the West Coast Eagles was on when they played Collingwood, and the show started in 10 minutes and the game finished in 5, and the whole crowd was in there, packed out on their phones, watching it. They lost by a point. Everyone was miserable. Oh, yeah. Then we had to go out and do the show.
Yeah.
Everyone was just like, oh, yeah, great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hard.
That was the hardest gig I've ever done.
Yeah, that was. Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah.
Good job.
That's why comedy's great. Never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Was that your joke? Because it was.
That wasn't my joke. No, it was a story.
That was a shit joke.
This is like an early, really early joke of mine that I don't even like, but it always holds a special place in me because it's about my brother and my mum. And sometimes you get lost in your jokes, and then I didn't. The first time I told it, they were like, when I first came back to Perth, I told the joke and they were both in the room and I just forgot.
Jared. Just tell the fucking joke.
And anyway,
sorry.
What is special is like just seeing something you've told about your family members and they're on stage to a crowd of audience and they're like, oh, he said that. But anyway, the joke was simply, and this is true, that my brother was circumcised, right? And I wasn't, which is really strange. Like that's a really, really weird thing. And I don't know how that happened because I think my dad wanted my brother to look like him. I think my mum wanted me to look like her. And as soon as that came out of my mouth, I looked at both of them sitting next to each other and I went, oh, wait. Jokes have consequences.
I just got that. Your parents are there.
Yeah.
They were just cheap, right?
And yeah. I didn't think much about it. I just wrote my set list and I was like, oh, I've never told this in front of them.
You know, one of my mates, he was born with that ear, so they used his foreskin. It was a cochlear implant.
Can you smack that up?
I've had it hanging around for a while.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
Sorry for swearing before, Yvonne, I just slipped out.
Yeah. I think you're allowed on here. It's okay.
Oh, cool.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Sorry, did your parents explain that?
Never.
Yeah, what was the cost-cutting with the...
Cost-cutting? No, it literally came...
Even I'm laughing at me, Angel.
We used to have a bath together when we were kids, and I'm like, "What's going on there?" Hang on. He's like, "What's going on there?" You know. And
is your back hurting? Or?
We had a big conversation after that because that was the first time I exposed it to the world, and that created this big conversation in the family. Like, what? You only did one? Like, what did you have a coupon? You know. And yeah, it turned out that like Dad was real pro and Mum was real not, and he came first.
Wow. I bet it was rock, paper, scissors.
Definitely scissors. Definitely one scissors.
Cost cutting.
So, yeah. I haven't done that joke in a long time, but I've moved past dicks.
I like that Rodney Reed joke where his son was born without any eyelids and the doctor goes, oh, we'll just use his foreskin. And he goes, wouldn't that make him cockeyed? Nah, think of the foresight he'll have.
Nice.
It's not as good as mine, though. It's good.
Take that, Rodney.
Yeah. How do people find you guys on social media?
Oh, Dogfather Comedy, Mick Gledhill, Dogfather Comedy on Insta. My webpage is mickcomedy.com.au.
I'm excited you got a webpage now.
Yeah, I've got to put all my bookings on there. Yeah, Simone runs it.
Nice.
She's the most influential comedian in my life because she's doing all my work.
That's great.
Yeah, she's cool. Yeah.
Just simply Jared Gowdry, my name, or The Comedy Collective, just another company I run, or On The Road Comedy, another comedy company that I run as well. So any one of them.
Yeah, you're killing it, man, at the moment. Yeah.
Business, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I said it at the
You've got to be in control of the business in comedy. Yeah. I said it a while ago.
You got to know the business,
because
right?
If you can hang around and wait for people to give you jobs, or you can make your own.
That's the thing. That's the thing with mental health too. Get educated. You know, do something different. You know, just something to... Have a positive distraction in your life, you know, and learn something new because it will make you feel a whole lot better about yourself.
True. Yeah. And, be proactive. You contacted us when you were still in isolation, didn't you?
Yeah, got to hustle, you know, and you got to literally back yourself because I back myself quite highly as a comedian. You know, I'm not where I want to be, but I can compete. So you got to be ready. And someone says, hey, can you do this? Yeah, sure thing, and do it.
Yeah, well just done.
Get it done.
Yeah. Very nice.
And we're NY Events, and we've got events at the Charles Hotel, the Korean Hotel, the Kalamunda Hotel, the Parkerville, and the Guildford Stirling Arms. So look us up at nyevents.com.au or on Facebook or Instagram. Thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Yvonne. It's awesome to see you again. Oh. It's always a laugh with you.
I love catching up with you guys.
So. Sorry we were so us.
You were disgusting. You should be ashamed of yourself.
I am.
You should be going to church.
You guys are fantastic. Yeah. Hey, and thanks everyone for listening. We're back again next week, and we're actually streaming in someone that's in Melbourne lockdown at the moment, another comedian. All right, till then, we'll chat to you all later.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.